about as tall as Gemma. So it's kind of funny. I guess it was like 4 weeks ago, Gary asked, "Hey, will you speak on July 4th? It's like, "Yeah." And I was out of town with my friend Sean, and I was just thinking about what am I going to talk about. And I had this topic that is important to me and impactful to me. And it was just kind of like mulling it over, like you do. You think about it, and you pray, you read the Word, you think about it more. And I hadn't really like put notes to it. And I came back home from Germany, and you know, and some of it was provoked by some of what Danny had said during the congregational meeting. And come home, and Stephanie's like, "Hey, you should listen to Nicole's message from last week. It was really good." And I listened to it, and like half of her message was all of my what I was thinking of talking about in trust. And so I was just kind of like, "Well, what do you do about that?" And so thankfully, I have wise counsel from great hair women in my life, and Leanne told me that I'm just playing. I love it. She said you should absolutely just continue to do what God's put on your heart. And so I'm still just going to, I've memorized as much of Nicole's message as I could. And so I'm just going to see how it comes out. But before I recite Nicole's message, I'll pray. Lord, thank you for being a man of your word, for meeting here with us. God, for bringing people into our lives to share words of wisdom, to encourage us. Lord, even to say the same things that are in our hearts so that we can have consistency in what we're hearing and you're telling other people and how they receive it from your word. So God, I ask that you would open our hearts and minds. Lord, open my heart and my mind to receive whatever you have for me and us this morning. God, so your will can be done so that we can truly share the reality of the true gospel. The reality that the kingdom of heaven is here. It's at hand. You want us to participate with you in life. Yeah, so God, I just ask that your will be done. In Jesus' name, amen. So I'm going to talk about trust. Surprise. And trust for me is a pretty general, fundamental, non-spiritual thing, especially when it comes with participating in a team, when it comes to really just like growing in trust with God. And part of that comes from my history, which I'll talk about, but it really gets down to the purpose of trust within our teams. And so the team specifically, obviously, we're in church, so we're going to talk about us and Jesus as a team. And so trust drives missional focus. That's what it does in a team effort. And so what is our mission? Outside of an organization, outside of a congregation, outside of ministry, like just me and the Lord, what is my mission? And in thinking about this, I came up with my mission and my relationship and a unified effort with the Lord is for me to simply be continually transformed. That's it. That's all he needs me to do. He needs me to wake up today wanting to be different than I was yesterday. And so from that perspective, I want to talk about trusting and living on mission in our personal lives. Trust in a team, us and Jesus, comes from time. Time we spend together allows us to learn three dynamics of being in a team with one another. It lets us learn our role, our responsibility, and our rhythms. And that contributes to mission success through unified effort. So for me, like, trust, and we kind of have this vision in, not kind of, we have this vision in our Key Street that our goal is to take disciples deeper. So trust and deep roots to me is not a hyper-spiritualized thing. It's very practical in my eyes. It's not a miracle. Trust is not a miracle. Trust is worked out over time. Deep roots are grown over time. And so in the military, this is kind of my background in establishing trust. I was in the training sector for a couple of years, and so as I accidentally locked my iPad, there's dynamics of like how to establish trust within a four-man fire team. That's how the Marine Corps operates. We know how much time it takes, what that time should look like, set over a training revolution of 21 days. And at the end of it, regardless of how they start, there will be trust and missional focus. And so we know from all the data that we have, it's between 240 and 300 hours. And we can cram these into as few days as the capacity of the team can handle. So depending on the operational level of the team, you can make it a more condensed time, or it needs to be over more time. So typically it's a 21-day training cycle. And how that breaks down is 10 classroom days at 8 hours a day with weekends off initially. And then 12 field days, which is 2 weeks with 2 days set aside for arriving and setting up camp and then leaving and breaking down camp. 18 hours a day, and that comes out to 296 hours. So that's a 21-day training revolution where you take these groups, you put them in teams of four. It's completely chaotic. Nobody can do anything. Everybody in a war scenario would be dead. And then by the end of the 21 days and 296 hours, you have very beginning level of like an efficient team that can have missional focus at a unified effort and a completed mission. So I say all of that to say there's times when we wind up in a place in our relationship with the Lord where our trust is challenged. And we want to correct ourselves by just going, do better. Why are you doubting? Why are you having this issue that you didn't have before? Why aren't you doing this? Why can't you do this? And we really lose this idea that, wow, for me to actually have a higher level of missional focus, I need 260 to 300 hours to reestablish a unified effort so I can walk in trust and have missional focus again. And we don't give ourselves that credit. We think, well, I'm going to go pray about it. And 30 minutes later, or however long you pray, 3 hours later, you could even go and just pray for 10 hours. 10 hours later, you come back and you feel the same challenge because we have this data of how we operate in a team, how unified efforts are established, and we get off the data because we're critical of ourselves. So we establish these three R's: role, responsibility, and rhythms. And so these are how I sat down and I communicated with the Lord and I got out of the Word my roles with Him and our unified effort. And so my roles come from John 15:5. I'm just called to abide in Him. In our relationship, my job is to abide. Colossians 3. My job here is to set my sights on the realities of heaven and to be transformed by His nature and receiving that over how I feel, what I think, what I want. These are my roles within our relationship. It's not, my role isn't, well, I got to go save people. My role isn't coming and going, I got this gem in my crown. I came up with this really cool quip of a word for people to have a tangible thing that makes them feel spiritual. No, because my mission is to be transformed. And so my role is to allow him to do that. It's just surrendering. And responsibilities is a lot of times where we see our failures. Because I can fulfill a role pretty easily as long as nobody looks at the responsibilities that come from that role. And so my responsibility, I see it as three things that God asks of me in totality. He asks for all of my love, he asks for all of my trust, and he asks for all of my fear. You know, and that's something that I'm always going to fail at. There's never going to be a point in my daughter's lives where they come to their dad and they're like, have you made it yet? And I'm able to say, yeah, I fear God more than anything. I love God more than anything. I trust God more than anything. Because that's my points of failure. My responsibilities are always going to be my points of failure. And then you have rhythms. And the reality of a team, when we know our role and our responsibility, when am I called to implement that? And for me, it's, you know, in room clearing, you have a fatal front, you have the guy kicking in the door. His job is just right there. And he knows his role. He knows his responsibility. The team has trust and missional focus where everything on the periphery is not his concern. That's his teammates' concerns. And so that rhythm of what do I do when my role and responsibility is supposed to be implemented. And so for me and Jesus, Matthew 6:33 says, seek first the kingdom of heaven and his righteousness, and everything else will be added to you. Everything else is going to work out. James 1:2-3, in opposition, in trials and tribulation, consider it joy. Proverbs 24:16 says, the godly may trip 7 times, but they will get up again. So keep training. It doesn't say keep training. I added keep training. So I know my rhythm is first. Before anything else, first. What is your righteousness? What is your character in this moment? What is your will in this moment? What is your whatever? You, not me, in this moment. And then when I feel opposition. You know, the enemy doesn't actually show up and kick us in the mouth. He meets us in our doubt. He tries to just manipulate us with that, get our focus off with, psst. It can be as simple as that. My missional focus is here, and he just wants to psst and get me off focus. So in opposite, to know when I'm not 100% on, when I got distracted from that, well, did God really say that, Jake? Do you really think you're supposed to talk about the same thing that Nicole talked about? Do you really think that you're supposed, whatever it is, to consider a joy that I know because of this opposition, my faith is being made stronger. And that when I fall, when I fail, when I realize I'm holding sin, when I realize I'm separating myself from God's will and his character, then being able to get back up and get back into training so I can develop more trust, so that I can have a unified effort and be back on the team. So these build trust over and over and over and over. Because trust is the product of unity. When I have unity with somebody, I develop trust. When you take a group of Marines that are challenging in and of itself, by themselves, and you put them in a group for a sustained amount of time in close quarters, unity happens and they begin to trust one another. The ego goes away, surprisingly, and people learn and adapt. But faith is not a product of unity. Faith is a product of intimacy. And a lot of times we get this convoluted idea, this muddying of the waters, that trust and faith are the same thing. And so when my trust is challenged, I think my faith is failing. And that's just not the reality. So unity develops trust, and intimacy develops faith. And unity and intimacy are not the same thing. Unity, and these are Jake Pulaski's definitions, so if you look at Webster's and it sounds better, it's probably because it is. Unity is the active alignment of mutual cooperation that brings individuals together to function as a team. That's all unity is. An active alignment of mutual cooperation. If we're walking in the same place to do the same thing, we have unity. Intimacy. Oh, and with unity comes observable outcomes. And those observable outcomes are what allow me to say, I can trust you to do the same thing next time. Intimacy is the spiritual, emotional, intellectual closeness achieved through transparency and vulnerability. And this happens on our own, between us and Jesus, between us and our spouse, between us and our kids, between us and our friends. And the difference in that time is that it's a selfless motive. It's not about getting something accomplished. It's just about being present and getting to know you, and you getting to know me. And with intimacy, there's really no observable outcome, and that's why it develops faith. Because in intimacy, there's no way for me to go, I know exactly how you're going to act the next time we have an intimate moment, so I can trust you. There's no trust there, it's faith. And so we know trust and faith aren't the same. We need both, and we need to know what we are growing in that time when we commit our time to development. If what I am doing is going to grow faith, and what I'm looking for is trust, then I'm going to be disappointed. If I go into something and go, I need to trust this person, but we're having an intimate moment, and there's no observable outcome, then I'm not going to actually just have trust for them. I'm going to have to continue in faith and vice versa. Does that make sense? Or is that just a thought in my own head that sounds, it makes sense to me? Great. Thank you. Appreciate that. So how do we lose trust? We lose trust from an observable negative outcome. This comes from a lie, a failure, degradation of character. It comes from, over time, seeing somebody that's not committed. They lose commitment. They walk slower. They walk in a different direction. They, you know, a lot of times it's tired of doing the same thing. The monotony can make somebody not want to go in the same direction. But whatever it is, we can't trust that the observable outcome is going to be the same. So how do we lose faith? There's no observable outcome. There's no way for me to see your character being changed. And the way we're talking about Jesus, he's not going to lie to me. There isn't going to be a degradation of character. And so we lose faith by doubt. The enemy cannot attack our trust in God because of the reason I just said. He's not going to lie or have a failure for the enemy to point at, so he attacks our faith. That's why he sows doubt in the, did God really say that, Jake? And so, evidence of faith is simply continued obedience. Regardless of what I'm thinking, regardless of what I'm feeling, regardless of what I'm wanting, am I going to continue doing what I know that I'm supposed to do? And you're going to see it in others, because in James 2, like it says, faith without works is dead. So if I'm not seeing something come out of my faith, and I know there's an issue in my faith. I know that there's an issue in what I am coming to the Lord in a unified effort to accomplish. And a lot of times where that step back from faith happens is just simply lack of intimacy. Because intimacy is our motivation in our walk with the Lord. If I'm not feeling motivated to do something with my faith, then, I mean, I'm going to be bold and say 100% of the time it's an intimacy issue. It's because I'm going with a motive to get something out of our time. I'm going to get trust. I'm not going to grow my faith without it, with a selfless motive. You know, and faith doesn't mean without struggle either. You know, opposition is opposition. And no matter how much time you have in training and development and knowing how to combat that opposition, knowing the right scriptures, knowing the right person to call, knowing the team, knowing you have a unified effort. And when you, even in the natural, from a warfare perspective, we all know here, war is atrocious. Opposition does something. There's an element, a measurable element of opposition, even in the spiritual side of things. And we think this faith has to do with us just being perfect and happy and all of the other emotions that people would go, man, Jake really has it on lock. But that's not what shows faith. It really is just, wow, Jake needs to run a brush through his hair, but at least he's still being obedient. Or, wow, Jake needs some sleep, but he's still being obedient. Or his shirt's not ironed, but praise God, he's still being obedient. Whatever the outside looks like, or whatever it sounds like, or whatever I'm feeling, if it's still obedience, it's still faith. That's not my note, so that's a free. That might have just been for me to brush my hair. So what kind of spurred this on Danny a couple weeks ago at the congregational meeting. He was talking about when he and Gary were working together, and I think Danny's less cynical than he feels he is, but has a high discernment of things. And he said, Gary, I'm paraphrasing, or just making up my own words, I don't know. What if we're Jeremiah? Is that right? Okay, I'll get back to my notes now. What if we're Jeremiah's? What if what we're doing winds up like him? And so I looked into, like, how disgruntled was Jeremiah? And in Jeremiah 20:18, he says, why was I ever born? My entire life has been filled with trouble, sorrow, and shame. And the verses before that are even worse. So what if we live in our calling that would bring us to the point that we would question why we're even here? What if we got to the point where I was really just like, curse my birth, curse my mom, curse my dad. Why would you do this to me? You know, it took not just trust. You know, and every prophet, they had their issues, but that aspect of counting the cost. We have trust, we have faith. We've spent the 300 hours of team development in order to know that me and Jesus can do it. We have unified effort. We have missional focus. I know my calling. I know my identity. I know why I'm here. I know why the people I'm here with are here. I have faith in you. And when everything goes bad, I have joy. I know my strength is being bolstered in knowing you even more. But we have to count that cost. We have to be able to look at it and go, what if I am Jeremiah? You know, and being here in Israel, there's people that think you're wrong. And I'm from Texas. And so most of my friends and family in Texas think I'm right. But my friends outside of Texas, I have a lot of friends and family that don't agree with me being here. To them, I'm missing it. To them, I'm not a believer. To them, I'm wrong. To them, I'm probably going to hell. To them, I'm helping a satanic regime. Like, all of the things. And so, however it looks and feels and all of those aspects of the outside trying to get inside, when we know what we're giving up, it'll allow us to see our faith being challenged, but our trust is secure in the tangible moments that we can recall. And this is going to allow us to see that the Lord takes care of us. It's going to allow us to maintain missional focus and move out again in faith. And God did give Jeremiah these tangible moments of surety that even though he would curse the day that he was being born, he had these moments where God was like, I'm going to make sure that you understand I'm with you. He assured him that regardless of everybody around him, that he was going to be there and he would rescue him. He assured him of his identity as a fortified city. and didn't say gold, but like an iron pillar or a bronze wall. Like that aspect of what Gemma brought today of like making sure that the gold is on the pillar. Am I actually wearing my identity that God put on me? And he gave him visions so that he would know, even through metaphor, I guess you would call it, that he was actively moving to fulfill his word. And so all of that to say, trust and faith, being transformative in our life, our most strategic transformation. I say strategic because our will has to do something, has something to do with it. And so I have to be a part of the strategy. Surrendering is a strategy. And so that is me. So our most strategic transformation is one of focus. And that focus is on the spiritual more than the natural. That's the most important thing we can have a part in. What am I looking at? From what perspective? Because a lot of times, God's not really going to do anything about the natural things. They're just here. If you keep smacking your head on a branch that you walk, there's this lemon tree, that there's this green lemon that's right at the same height, and I hit my head on it every time, and I still haven't moved it. God's not going to show up and move that lemon. That's my job. Thank you, Baruch. So our focus should be in the spiritual, not the natural. And that's a lot of reason why trust is really great for a unified effort. Trust is really great for humans. It's really great if we are going to be in a team. I don't really need God to prove to me that he's with me. I shouldn't anyway. If I do, he'll let me spend the 300 hours of time to develop intimacy, but really he wants me to grow in faith. And when I can get my faith off of the natural things and put it onto the spiritual things, then I can actually do something with my faith. I feel like that's enough. So the last thing regardless of what anything looks like, regardless of finances, regardless of ministry opportunities, regardless of where you're living, regardless of community. You know, one of the best things I think that God gave Jeremiah was the vision to show him I am active in my will being accomplished. And nothing around Jeremiah at the time would have given him that input that God is active in accomplishing his will. Everybody was like, against him, obviously. It's my greatest encouragement from all of whatever this is. Sight is the greatest enemy of vision. What I see in front of me and what I've seen God put in my spirit are always going to be in opposition with one another. But vision is the greatest catalyst of faith. That when I know that I know that I know that what is inside of me is something that God gave me, I don't care what my eyes are seeing. And that the simplest way to develop that is just to be intimate with God. There's not this crazy thing that we have to go order by order by order in order to achieve more faith. He's just saying, come abide in me. Come be with me. Come with a selfless motive, and I'll put it all on you. I'll show it all to you. I'll tell you all about it, and we'll get to go and do it together. So, thank you. And now Harry has a closing word.
When I was thinking about your words, especially in closing, I thought about the disciples. When they walked to Jesus and he said, "Look at this beautiful temple," Jesus says, "Well, not one stone will be left on top of one another," and it was true. And I think always when what we see make us blind, but the unseen things remain, right? And that's my closing words, but I also want to give a blessing to each one of you, because we were in the Lord, and we are staying in the Lord. So maybe we can just rise. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. There's still something that you would like to contribute?
I'm flexible.
Be flexible.
Thank you.